And welcome to the Green Front. We can turn it around, and I keep saying if we wake up, but it seems like the opposite is happening. Hate to be Debbie Downer and be negative, especially at the top of the show, but my goodness, the news in my inbox just keeps getting worse in terms of the fossil fuel industry, what they are up to, what they are sinking to. It is not to be believed. I'm talking about their war on wind and renewable energy, all to make sure that, in their mind, President Obama does not get reelected. I can't think of anything more short-sighted, greedy, and downright stupid to put the entire planet and future generations at risk for their own short-term political gains. So we're going to talk about what will be happening to our atmosphere, our climate, our weather in the near term if we don't turn it around, and that just lets us know what we are up against here and what we are motivated to do and because of what is coming, and that is deaths at really high levels from record heat. We're going to be talking to Carol Oldham and Drew Grand. They're friends of the Green Front. They're going to be telling us about a new report from the NRDC, the Natural Resources Defense Council. It's not going to be good, and that is just on the East Coast in the Boston area alone. They're expecting some additional 150,000 Americans could die. That's not anytime soon. That's by the end of this century. But, of course, we're starting to see record heat waves. We already have in Europe, and more could come this summer in terms of deaths from record heat. Already breaking records over the Memorial Day weekend. There were lots of events. You know, all the patriots out, God bless America, but I sometimes say God help America, as we saw severe weather with Beryl and other extreme events really not only interfering with some of the celebrations, but also causing some real hardship and some real suffering. At the race track at Indianapolis, I think they had temperatures, they said, reaching 140 degrees inside some of those race cars because of the extreme heat, and it's only May. We haven't even officially gotten into summer yet. So we're going to be talking about that in our first half. In our second half, we'll be chatting with someone from the Silicon Valley, you know, Clean Tech Alley area, and that is Mike Mielke. He is with the Silicon Valley Business Leaders, talking about cap and trade, how it is being enacted quite successfully here in California, while you know who, the opposition, the fossil fuel industry, and the mouthpieces that they pay are saying cap and trade would be a disaster for jobs, and we're going to be talking about how that is so not true, especially here in California, where it's already leading to jobs and leading to a lot of companies taking on climate change and looking to reduce their energy footprint because they have to, and if that's what it takes, legislation, well, then it is what it takes. And if it's working in California and we are a trendsetter here, then it should work for the rest of the nation. Not that cap and trade is the best option. We talk here, and we're going to be talking here in just a moment, about a better option, and that is the fee and dividend approach. And to help me do that, I want to welcome back to the show Drew Grand. He is with the Sierra Club based in Boston, and he is going to be with us right now, I believe. We're also getting Carol Oldham with the National Wildlife Federation. Hey, Drew.
Hey, Betsy. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. You know, people have been asking me that lately, and, you know, from the checkout clerk at the grocery store to my bank teller, and, you know, it's hard when you're upset about all these things, and we do take it to heart, we activists, to say, oh, everything's great, you know, and yet if I say awful, the world's, you know, planet's coming to an end, people kind of look at you like you're a Martian. So I don't know what you do in those situations, but I'm fine. I think it's the rest of the world that really needs to wake up. I mean, I'm mostly fine. No one's perfect and all. But those of us who really are concerned about our future are seeing a lot of bad news. We're not going to talk about all the bad news. There is some good news. But tell us your perspective after reading this report from the NRDC in terms of more record heat and what that will mean in terms of Americans dying perhaps from, you know, temperatures we've never seen the likes of before, sort of what happened in Europe 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, it's interesting, Betsy. You know, unfortunately, I think there's not going to be too much new information in this report for your listeners. It's kind of a confirmation of what a lot of us knew already, is that the temperatures are getting hotter. It's getting hotter earlier and staying hotter longer. You know, we've got a heat wave going on right now here in Boston. We had high 70 degree temperatures in early March, and then we're getting all sorts of other weird weather. But the NRDC put on this killer summer heat report, and what it says is that you can expect hotter days, more of them, and expect them to come earlier and last longer in the year. And those hotter temperatures mean that we're going to start seeing more hospitalizations and more deaths related to high heat. And unfortunately, this is, you know, it adversely affects and affects the young and our seniors most often. And it's most concerning when you stop and look at the demographics of this for a second and take notice that the baby boomers are soon to become seniors. So we're going to have a large population bubble coming through that are going to be being put at risk for heat-related illnesses and deaths.
And these projected deaths from this NRDC report are based on the assumption that carbon pollution will continue to rise in the absence of new policies, which you know, continues to be the case, the absence of new policies that would begin to, you know, turn the giant slow ship around. And, of course, you know, carbon dioxide, other greenhouse gases, have a long shelf life. They're in the atmosphere for decades after we emit them. So as long as we're, you know, wasting time while home burns, or twittering while home burns, as someone said, tweeting while home burns, we are really risking our own, you know, health and safety and future. And this is just in this century with, you know, this and maybe the next generation in view. Lord knows what happens behind them if we don't sort of, you know, wake up and, as I say, smell the carbon.
Right. Yeah, and you know, speaking of that, we've got two interesting things going on right now. One is a new policy that we're looking forward to, and that's the Environmental Protection Agency's issuing of new carbon rules to limit carbon emissions from new coal-fired power plants. The EPA just recently held hearings on that last week in Washington and Chicago. Overwhelmingly public support for this, saying that, yes, we need to start limiting carbon emissions, and we need to start holding these coal companies accountable. They've made money off of making us sick for far too long. So that's one thing we're looking forward to. And the other is we hope to see an extension of the production tax credit for wind turbines voted on by the Senate this year. It expires at the end of this year, and if it doesn't pass, we're going to see the loss of 37,000 American jobs this year because of paralysis in the United States Senate, because people like Senator Scott Brown from here in Massachusetts will say they're for it, but when it comes time for a vote, they vote against it.
You've had a lot of focus on him. Tell us, you know, just how disturbing it is, some of his actions, just in relation to the environment, for those who don't follow the politics, you know, either locally or the climate politics nationally.
What we've seen from Senator Brown is, it's very easy for him to say he supports something. It's very easy for him to go out and talk about it and say it would be great for us to be getting our energy resources from clean energy. It would be great if we could extend the production tax credit. I support the production tax credit to create more jobs here in America, good, high-quality, good-paying, middle-class jobs, union jobs that are going to be created from this. When it comes time for him to vote, we've seen him take the opposite action on that. Back in March, he came out with a statement saying he supported the production tax credit. And then about a few weeks later, about a month later, when it came time for him to vote on it, he opposed it. He opposed it, saying that he wasn't sure how this was going to be paid for. But the truth of it is that we've had this tax credit for the wind industry for 20 years now. It's nothing new. It's something that's been out there for quite some time. It's shown to be effective. It's shown to create jobs. And he voted against it for ideological reasons, because Senator Mitch McConnell told him that he doesn't support it, so that Scott Brown shouldn't support it either, despite the fact that the people of Massachusetts really want to see the production tax credit extended.
Mm. I just learned that Carol Oldham is under the weather today, speaking of the weather, so she will not be able to join us, but thank you for being with us. The Sierra Club has been working, you know, probably longer than any other of the environmental NGOs on preserving our resources, our environment, our life support system, and most specifically and urgently and loudly on climate change. What is the mood there? Are people who, you know, do this for a living getting discouraged, like some of us activists are? And you know, is there reason to be optimistic that I'm just not seeing maybe lately?
Yeah,
cheer me up, please.
There's a lot of good reasons to be optimistic. We've been very the last couple of years, we've been very locally focused in a lot of our campaigns, and specifically with the Beyond Coal campaign. Got started about 10 years ago when George Bush and Dick Cheney took the coal executives from across the country, put them in a room, and said, we're going to come up with a national energy policy, and opened the door back up and said, our national energy policy is 150 new coal-fired power plants for across the country. The Sierra Club and local activists and other environmental organizations got together, and one by one, fought each one of those proposed coal-fired power plants to the point where they stopped 166 proposed plants. So we were able to keep all of that carbon in the ground and out of the air. From there, we've been able to turn our focus to retiring the current existing fleet of coal-fired power plants. So whether it's the 18 plants in the Tennessee Valley Authority, the Crawford and Fisk plant in Chicago, the BL England plant in New Jersey, or the TransAlta plant in Washington, or here in Massachusetts where we're fighting the Mount Tom coal plant in Holyoke, Massachusetts, we've been winning these fights by presenting the facts to local citizens, the local elected leaders, people like Governor Patrick here in Massachusetts, and bringing the same message to them of this plant in Holyoke is making the people of Holyoke sick. It's degrading their quality of life, and it's not providing the necessary services. The electricity is too expensive. The healthcare costs are too high. Let's work to retire this plant and transition the workers to another industry. And we've been able to win those fights to the point where we've retired 103 existing coal plants. Secured 103 retirements for those existing plants. And we're continuing to fight and continuing to move forward. But what we found is that, like I said, with the production tax credit, is the paralysis in Washington is keeping us from doing something big, but we're getting those local victories that are having a huge impact on both the people who live in those communities and also helping to slow down climate change.
And yet, the more that we continue to rely on coal and oil as our primary source of energy in this country, I guess the bigger the profits they have, the more money they have to spend on slick TV ads saying clean coal is the future. And if I didn't know better, I'd, kind of tear up at those Hallmark sort of Disney-esque ads that are all over, the network programs.
The good news on that is when I started with the Sierra Club about 2 years ago, The number that was being used was that 48% of electricity in this country comes from coal. Comes from coal. Today, this is 2 years later. That number is now down to 38%. So we've seen a huge reduction in electricity from coal sources.
That's good to know, because I had heard as recently as a month ago that it was about half. So that is good news.
Yeah. So it's that comes from the EIA, the Energy Information Administration. So good solid numbers shows that we're doing a good job, but also shows that we still have a lot more work to do. And we're always excited to get local activists or anyone out there who's interested in these issues. We know your listeners are always interested in helping out. We're always looking to get more people enlisted to help fight these coal plants.
Absolutely, and the EIA, is it EIA or IEA, just issued a report about fracking and natural gas, how that's not necessarily the way to go either.
Right. Yeah, the natural gas, pretty much what it comes down to is clean air doesn't come from a smokestack. So if you're looking at a source, whether it's coal, natural gas, biomass, if there's a smokestack involved, I can guarantee you it's not a factory that's pumping clean air up into the air for us to breathe.
Yeah, this is a report on climate progress today, just talking about that. And that's the other thing. If natural gas was so abundant, Drew, why would they be fracking to the point of, causing earthquakes in some areas, albeit small, but still earthquakes, connected to this fracking process, and risking contamination of local water supplies? Doesn't that say, just by definition, that we're running low? Same with, peak oil. Why would we be, putting oil rigs, a mile deep, way out there, ever farther out in the ocean, if we weren't, really getting past the stage of the low-hanging fruit?
Yeah, it's a good question, and the cost of natural gas, much like these other sources of energy, are very cyclical. The good news is that we do know where we can get a stable supply of electricity from, and that's from renewable sources. If we turn our attention to states that are doing it right, like Iowa and South Dakota, that are getting more than 20% of their energy from wind, we know that we can get clean air, we can get good, well-paying American jobs, and we also can lower the health care costs for all Americans. It's coal plants out in Ohio, and it's natural gas production that's polluting the air across the country, where we know that the cost of wind is free, the cost of sunlight is free, and we can get We can put America back to work doing this and not have to worry about polluting our air or polluting our water while we're getting stable electric grids.
Okay, here it is. I just found the excerpt from the International Energy Agency report. It's called Golden Rules for a Golden Age of Gas, and it says that the Golden Rules case puts CO2 emissions on a long-term trajectory consistent with stabilizing the atmosphere, concentration of greenhouse gas emissions at around 650 parts per million, a trajectory consistent with a probable temperature rise of more than 3.5 degrees Celsius in the long term, well above the widely accepted 2-degree centigrade target. This finding reinforces a central conclusion that while a greater role for natural gas in the global energy mix does bring environmental benefits where it substitutes for other fossil fuels, natural gas cannot on its own provide the answer to the challenge of climate change. It says at such levels, global warming could run out of control. Deserts would take over in southern Africa, Australia, and the western United States, and sea level rises could engulf small island states. That happened to be buried in the report, but no small details there.
No, it's not. It's quite scary, and it's scary to think of what we're doing with that. But the thing to keep looking at is that we have the opportunity to get the energy from the sources we want, and it takes people like yourself and myself and your listeners to stand up and say this is not the future that we want. The future that we want is clean, and we know how to make that happen.
And really, it does come down to the public being informed and educated and,
right,
you know, activated and perhaps agitated to let their legislators know that this is a priority. That's what we really haven't seen enough of. I mean, yes, it's happening, and God bless the activists and the environmental groups and nonprofits and climate change organizations working night and day on this, and yet it still seems like it's a rather small percentage of the American population that's, you know, very concerned about this and making it a top priority.
It doesn't take much to get in touch with your senator or congressman. We've always talked in the past about writing a letter to the editor, giving a call, going into their office. We just went in today with a group of activists that we told about the production tax credit, and we went in to go see Senator Brown's office in Boston today to let him know that we want him to actually vote in favor of this thing in the future. But oftentimes it's just as easy as going on to their Facebook or Twitter feed and putting a note up on there. Recently read an article in the past month that said one of the most effective ways to reach your senator is to write on their Facebook wall. Let them know what it is you want to hear. That's 90% of what they're paying attention to these days. It's kind of frightening that, you know, Facebook and Twitter is what gets their attention, but if that's what they're paying attention to, it can be that easy. It's just to put a note up there saying, this is what I want you to support, and I will support you if you vote in favor of, you know, the production tax credit, or if you vote in favor of more regulations on fracking for clean water and clean air.
So it may be okay that we're Twittering while home is burning if we're tweeting about such matters as climate change, and if we can't be in their faces, at least be on their Facebook pages.
Yeah, be right on their Facebook, be right on their Twitter feed about it. Make sure you're tagging your representative or senator. Yeah, absolutely.
Good point. What other tips do you have, Drew, for those of us who really want to do more and can't necessarily go to Washington and lobby or, you know, meet with legislators? And you know, where I live here in Northern California, our representatives pretty much get it. You know, it's not, you know, the Lynn Woolseys or the, you know, Dianne Feinsteins or the Barbara Boxers that need to know this. They pretty much get it. But what about, you know, for the rest of the country that we want to come along quickly?
Yeah, the unfortunate thing is there's not a lot we can do about Senator Inhofe down in Oklahoma, unless you have any listeners down in Oklahoma. But we can always ask the Senator Boxers and the Senator Kerrys, who are big champions of this stuff, get in touch with them and let them know that we support them on this, that they can always be doing more, that what they're doing is great, but we'd like to see them doing more. We'd like to see them reaching out and being more supportive of these initiatives, like the production tax credit, whether it's voting for or getting in touch with our office and saying, can the senator write an op-ed, or can they be, what do they need from us to help them push that agenda more? You know, do they need to hear from us? They need to hear from us on their Facebook or Twitter feeds. Do they need to get a letter from us? Do they want to see a letter to the editor in the local paper saying that we support what they're doing? There's all sorts of things. You know, whether it's looking in your local paper and seeing where they're going to be at the, you know, this past weekend at the Memorial Day parade and showing up and you know, holding a sign of support, or if you have a member of Congress or the Senate like Senator Scott Brown, who isn't always with us on this, to be out there in front of them and let them know that they're not voting with their constituents, but you have to find a way to make your voice heard, and you'd be surprised that it doesn't take much for our representatives to hear our voice. So if it's whether it's giving them a phone call or shooting them an email, or doing something online, they do hear about it.
I'm glad to hear that. That is an effective and efficient way to invest our time and energy. And in the next half hour, we're going to be speaking with Mike Mielke. He's with the Silicon Valley Business Leaders Group. He's in charge of environmental policy, talking about how cap and trade, you know, recently enacted in California, is already beginning to create jobs and showing signs that it's working, while we hear, you know, yes, the fossil fuel industry funded spokespeople decrying how cap and trade will, you know, be the death of America. But in fact, there's a better version of cap and trade, and that's fee and dividends. We talk about that a lot on this program, the carbon fee approach. What is your position, and does the Sierra Club have any official position on fee and dividend at this point? Talking about the Citizens Climate Lobby Group, of course, and their great work.
Yeah, we keep looking to Washington to move forward with climate policy, or to move forward with clean energy policy, and it seems like each time we do that, we keep getting let down by our leaders in Washington. You know, we keep hearing from people that say they support it. You know, we'll have someone like Scott Brown here in Massachusetts say they support it and then vote against it, or we'll have someone like Senator John Kerry, who's been a great champion for us, come out and say he supports it, he'll vote for it, but unfortunately, he oftentimes doesn't have enough support from the other people around him. So we've been effective in being active locally. You know, we would love to see something happen nationally with legislation, but I feel like at this time we're moving forward and getting ready for that time when we have enough support in the Senate, and kind of hoping that, you know, in 2012 with the election coming up, that we can highlight some of those differences and you know, make our voices heard, so that, you know, when the new Congress comes in, we'll have people there that know that this is the issue for us. We just need to make sure that, you know, our Sierra Club members and listeners of this show get out there and support the candidates and, you know, let the leaders who are in office right now know that this is an issue and a priority for us.
Well, thank you so much, Drew Grand. Always appreciate your comments and your great work on the East Coast with the Sierra Club. And I think every NGO out there to combine forces and resources to really get the rest of the country on board. I know that there's a lot of volunteers for the Sierra Club that go door to door, especially during the election. So hopefully we'll see that out in full force in the next few months leading up to the election.
I'm looking forward to it. Betsy, thank you so much for having me on today. It's always a pleasure.
Okay, great. And when we come back, we're going to be speaking with a special guest who has been a very, very active blogger. We were hoping to get him on board. We'll let you know who he is right after this quick break. You're listening to The Green Front.